We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I've often wondered, we live on what Dr. John Warwick Montgomery has called borrowed Christian capital in Western civilization. That means that the influence of Christianity in terms of civilization is so profound in our society that we just don't see it. The scope is too broad, too big, too deep for us to fully plumb. And yet, if you look back in history, you can see the growing influence of Christianity as Christianity as a religion grows as well. And you see it spread some places, that influence, and not in others. There are whole sectors of the world that have once been under the influence of Christianity and then thrown it aside, darkened places of the world. And there are places in the world that have never, ever, in a real way, felt the influence of Christianity in a sociological, societal way. What would the world look like without the influence of Christianity? Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're beginning a series with him, The Impact of Christianity on Civilization Today, Human Life, Sex, Marriage, the Role and Status of Women. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me again.
If I could somehow subtract the influence and the impact of Christianity from civilization, Western civilization in particular, what would it look like?
That's a very good question that most people have never really even thought about, and even when you think about it, many people probably do it only very superficially. Well, one of the best ways to look at it is how Christianity elevated the value of human life, sanctified human life, if you will. Life was miserably cheap. We see some of that yet, for example, in Islamic societies, how easily and readily someone is killed and little disturbance or conscience is moved by it. And that's what it was in the days of the Greeks and the Romans and even also in other societies. Christianity came along and to illustrate in a number of ways how it elevated the sanctity of human life. Infanticide, the killing of little babies born right after birth and for some time after, were commonly practiced among the Greeks and the Romans. And I might mention also in other societies, Japan and the like. And this was perfectly legal. If you didn't want the child, you left it on the street or you killed it. The option, either one was available to the individuals. The Christians came along under the basis of the Old Testament commandment, thou shalt not murder, and said that, and practiced that this is not God-pleasing. These little infants are creatures of God and deserve the sanctity of human life as much as an adult does. And we see it, for example, in the Didache. The Didache was a Christian document written sometime between 80 and 110 A.D., wherein, for example, it addresses the early Christians and tells them, thou shalt not commit infanticide. And we also see, for example, in the Epistle of Barnabas, which was written about 130 A.D., where it explicitly and clearly condemns infanticide. W.E.H. Lecky, a British historian of the 19th century, said, quote, that infanticide was the deepest stain of ancient civilizations. Note, he speaks of civilizations, not just one. And then you have, by the year 374, now a Christian emperor in the Roman Empire, who formally outlawed infanticide, given or reinforcing what the Christians did during the years of persecution and after. And then there was the matter of child abandonment. If you didn't kill the child, you abandoned it. You know, it's interesting. The Greeks and the Romans even created myths to sort of justify and rationalize the abandonment of their children. For example, Ion, an abandoned child, became the founder of Ionia. Paris became the great hero in the Trojan War. And then we have Oedipus, the child that was absconded and abandoned and became famous through the play of Oedipus Rex, where the Greeks really admitted that they cast away children. Once in a while, as I said, they apparently tried to salve their conscience by showing, well, the child was abandoned, but he did survive and looked the great contributions that he made. Well, the Christians picked up abandoned children. They took them into their homes and raised them. And then Christianity elevated the sanctity of human life by strongly, consistently opposing abortion. Also mentioned in that book, the Didache, that I mentioned a little while ago. And few poets in the Greek and Roman society sometimes didn't like or faulted the practice of abortion, but they had no influence. Abortion was widespread. And by the way, once Christianity in the 4th century set a whole new tone by opposing abortion, not until the 20th century can one find any Western country where Christianity's influence was very pervasive, that abortion was even talked about, much less tolerated. In fact, most of it happened after World War II, and now we have some major Christian denominations that find no problem with abortion on demand. This is contrary to what the Christians did from day one. They also opposed the gladiator games, where, again, life was cheap and individuals' lives were taken as they fought the gladiatorial games. They opposed suicide. Again, even all the way into basically 100 years ago or less, suicide was categorically outlawed, and it still is, by the way, attempted suicide, except we have now a state like Oregon where assisted suicide is permitted. And so we see a departure from the practice of suicide. Well, that is how Christianity elevated the sanctity of human life. And it's so much embedded in our society today that even the secularists, to use the phrase that you did in connection with Dr. Montgomery, that people live on borrowed capital from Christianity, but they're totally unaware of it. And it's been my experience when you make that point, and no one wants to believe you because it's been so saturated in our country, in the Western society, that to take human life is something very, very sacred, and you cannot, you may not do it. And so we have laws against murder. We have laws against manslaughter. All of these would probably never have taken place had Christianity not come on the scene.
This raises kind of the question, the general question of what we take for granted today, especially in Western society, the concept of human rights or human dignity. I know that that's a late coming thing to Western civilization, but it seems to be nascent in much of how Western civilization ran its course under the influence of Christianity. Would we have in the best of all possible worlds, kind of a universal recognition of certain basic inalienable rights for human beings apart from the influence of Christianity?
I would say no. All one has to do is look back at the centuries of civilizations that existed before Christianity, before Christ made this influence upon the world through his followers. It just isn't to be found in the pages of history. Until Christianity came along, all of this changed. And so, no, that would not be the case. And this is difficult for people to believe because we have, as I said a moment ago, so deeply internalized. We've grown up, but these are just sort of things you do naturally. Well, they were not done naturally. And that's basically a story. And I said it wasn't just, for example, among the Greeks and the Romans, but it was also true in the Asiatic areas. So Christianity came along and really changed so many things for the better.
Let's talk a bit about, in connection to that, what positive things with regard to human life and welfare have been introduced beyond general concepts, but in terms of law and whatnot, have been introduced into Western civilization through the influence of Christianity.
Yeah, one of the things that is that I have mentioned in this book, and I had never seen it discussed anywhere else. It sort of flew out at me as I was doing my research, is what happened in the year 390 A.D. Here, at this particular time, Theodosius I, a Christian emperor of the Roman Empire, there was a riot that occurred a few months earlier in Thessalonica. He overreacted. He killed, slaughtered, if you will, 7,000 people, most of them innocent ones. And he lived, his palace was in Milan, Italy, which oddly enough was also where he went to church and where St. Ambrose, at that time not called a saint, where Ambrose was a bishop. And he heard about this event, and so he called Theodosius on the carpet, to use a metaphor, and said, "You will repent of this act, or if you do not, I will excommunicate you." Initially, he did not. It didn't take too long, however. He dressed in sackcloth and ashes and appeared in front of the congregations, confessing his error, and then reinstated in the church. Now, that is one of the earliest, if not the earliest, example of where the law that we today so much value, no man is above the law. Ambrose said to him, the emperor, you are not above the law. And then we had, for example, roughly 800 years later in England, the signing of the Magna Carta in 1215.
Let's take a break right there. When we come back, I want to get to the Magna Carta and its, if not its origins, and certainly its formation under the influence, the general influence of Christian thought and a Christian worldview. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We'll go on to talk about the morality of sex and marriage under the influence of Christianity and the role and status of women. You know, we're told that sex and marriage have had dark days under Christianity as well as women. Is that true historically? We'll answer those questions on the other side of the break. 1-877-623-6943. Stay tuned.
You can call it what you like. I call it mine.
You'll find a clearinghouse of Reformation resources at newreformationpress.com. T-shirts, music, outlines of important theological books, plus lectures by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Check it out, newreformationpress.com. If you like Reformation theology, you'll love New Reformation Press. www.newreformationpress.com.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the impact of Christianity on human life, sex, marriage, and the role and status of women, beginning a series with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book How Christianity Changed the World. You can read an excerpt of the book, How Christianity Changed the World, at issuesetc.org. Click on demand. That's our website, issuesetc.org. You were talking about the signing of the Magna Carta. Is that due largely to the influence of this notion you were discussing before the break? No man, including the emperor himself, is above the law?
Yes, it's a continuation, if you might, what was started by St. Ambrose in 390. And it's interesting, when you look at the history of the signing of the Magna Carta, one of the chief movers and shakers in bringing this document about was the Archbishop of Canterbury by the name of Stephen Langton. He also, by the way, is the man who was credited in first dividing the Bible into chapters, which is not a phenomenon that was there from the beginning, but he is the one who started it. He wrote a preface, if you will, and, for example, said John by the grace of God, and then continues to state the reverence for God that the people have and for our salvation of souls and ancestors. It goes on. This is the preamble of the preface to the Magna Carta. So you can see not only did it use Christian language, but it had an Archbishop of Canterbury, a prominent individual in the Church of England, at the helm of this particular document. And so it is a continuation of what I said happened in the late 4th century. And you also might give this a thought. The document of the Magna Carta, in a sense, put forth a creed or a political creed. Now, the precedent for putting forth a creed, not politically, but religiously, theologically, began with the Council of Nicaea. The Romans and the Greeks never formulated a creed relative to their gods that they worshiped. But the Christians in 325, the Council of Nicaea, formulated the creed, which we still use, as you know, and we use it in the Lutheran Church quite widely and quite frequently, in addition to the Apostles' Creed. And so, in a sense, you can say it set a precedent for a formal statement now in the context of political rights and freedom in the Magna Carta. So you had a political creed that evolved out of the idea of putting forth a creed theologically some 900 years earlier.
Let's talk about a trinity of things that go together, the morality and mores regarding sex, marriage, and then the role of women, beginning with sexual mores. What were they like apart from the influence of Christianity in society?
Pretty bad. In fact, there was really no sexual morality. In fact, let me just illustrate. Homosexuality among the Greeks and Romans was widespread. Child molestation, pederasty, pedophilia, however one wants to call it, was very, very common. In fact, I point out in the book, by quoting a certain historian, said it was almost impossible for a boy to grow up and not be accosted by an older adult male. And when we talk about homosexuality, really it was pederasty. It was an adult man having homosexual relationships with a puberty-age boy. Christianity came along and opposed it. And I might mention, we still have laws against pedophilia. Had it not been for Christianity, those laws would not be in effect. They weren't in effect among the Greeks and the Romans, and not elsewhere that I can tell either. And then you had, for example, relative to sex, and we may not even often think about this, outlawed, for example, some people say bestiality, it's really bestiality, and a human being having sex with an animal. Now, I found in my research actual archaeological evidence where either by engraving or a relief on an item showed sex between a woman and a horse and things of that nature. Today, bestiality is still illegal. Again, another major influence of Christianity. And so the whole sexual behavior. Also, sex was something that was pornographic aspect. It was very, very pornographic. I cite a given book in my book. It has been published within the last 20 years. Graphic pictures of how on household items like lamps and vases and pictures and plates had inscribed on them or painted on them in Roman society, for example, pornographic sexual pictures. Christianity came along and absolutely condemned this and had no part in it. So when we hear about the word pornography, it's another Christian contribution to the Greeks and Romans that was a matter of fact. Whether it was what we call pornography, whatever, was just a matter of sexual life.
Then let's talk briefly here at the end of at least this part of our conversation about the role of women, the status of women in society under the influence of Christianity.
Yes, that's another very powerful factor that happened. Christianity undermined two basic Roman institutions. One was called manus, which in Latin means the hand. But when a woman got married, she was under manus, the hand of her husband. In addition to that, and even preceding manus, there was patria potestas, meaning the father was all-powerful. This was part of the Roman 12 tables of law. It was the fourth table. The father was so powerful that he had the right of life and death over even his adult grown children. If he sometimes would release them from that particular obligation that he had, and they could function freely and the like. But the church again now, in 374, under the same Emperor Valentinian, who outlawed abortion, also outlawed patria potestas, that namely the father could not summarily take the life of a family member and be seen, well, as having followed the basic Roman law. You also had, for example, dignity of marriage was brought into play for women. Its view of marriage led to what I often say, the value of marital privacy, which again was not really common among the Greeks and the Romans. It urged the husband and wife, as Paul says in Ephesians, to love one another. They shared their property. Even secularists today still make much of a wedding ceremony. Wedding ceremonies among the Greeks and the Romans were often lampooned and maligned. They were sort of a necessary evil that was often joked about.
We have about 30 seconds here for a conclusion.
Yes, and it removed or nullified polygyny, or we often call it polygamy. Christ did not give any support to polygamy or polygynous marriages when he spoke about marriage. He said, and two shall be one flesh, not several or how many others. It also, for example, abolished the practice of sati in India, often referred to colloquially as widow burning. In 1829, the British outlawed this particular practice. When a woman's husband died, she was expected to go on the funeral pyre and be cremated with him. And if she didn't, her own children put her there. And then Christianity also abolished the Chinese foot-binding act that existed for hundreds of years. Also done through the efforts of missionaries, by the year 1912, the Chinese formally outlawed foot-binding of women. And it outlawed also the Christian influence of what we today refer to as female genital mutilation, often technically called clitoridectomy. Even the radical feminists today, who do not like Christianity, however, are opposed to clitoridectomy, and thank God that they are.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. Tomorrow with him, we'll be discussing the impact of Christianity on charity, compassion, and health care. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. Thank you so much for being our guest. Look forward to tomorrow's conversation.
Well, thank you.
Also tomorrow on the program, we'll discuss the active and passive obedience of Christ, two very important teachings of Holy Scripture. Dr. Rod Rosenblatt will be our guest. You see, there's just not enough time to discuss the scope, the breadth, and the depth of Christianity's influence in society. Is the world better off for the impact and the influence of Christianity in Western civilization? Most decidedly, yes. But the world is better off for an even better reason. Beyond its influence, Christianity has a message to proclaim. And much of what Christianity has done by way of improvement for the human lot in society is directly connected to the heart and center of Christianity. You see, at the heart and center of Christianity is not cultural or societal improvement. That can happen elsewhere. The heart and center of Christianity is not even your own personal self-improvement. No, the heart and center of Christianity is the person and work of Jesus Christ. The compassion that God has shown to us, sinners, a world of sinners, in giving his Son as a sacrifice for us at the cross, raising him from the dead and granting us freely by his grace the forgiveness of sins, this finds its way out into society, not only for the salvation of sinners, but also by way of influence, great and small, the betterment of our fellow man. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow, and thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.